on the airwaves.
Just briefly, Tom. Let's say that the 9/11 planes had been shot down, that the option was on the table and they shot the three planes down. How would they have explained that to the American people and to the families who were on board the planes?
Well, as one person said, the thinking was that shooting them down, they're taking lives in the air to save lives on the ground. That was the reasoning, and that's probably the reason why they took down that one flight in Pennsylvania.
What about the collateral damage when these planes' parts crash to Earth? Let's say you're shooting down a plane over Manhattan. A lot of collateral damage that has to be explained, and they weren't really sure, were they? That's one major risk, not even touching on the liability issue. Now, I'm not saying that it was right or wrong to let what happened happen once they saw the first one hit, but when you put into the equation the collateral damage from the falling airplane pieces and explaining to the families that their government shot down planes because they thought they were hijacked by terrorists.
Well,
it's very difficult.
Well, it's
and I don't hear that
the government thought
coming
that.
Up when I don't use the word fanatics, when fanatics present their position on 9/11. What about the collateral damage from the falling airplane parts?
If the government had that point of view, they have certainly remained silent on that point of view. They have never come forth and explained why the fighter jets never went up, why those planes have never intercepted. They haven't said anything. And you've postulated a theory on the thinking, but the government has never said anything.
You got planes taking off from Boston heading towards Manhattan, which isn't that far away. I've never flown that air channel, but it can't be more than a couple of hours. I think they made their 90 degree turn around Albany.
We have 15 seconds here.
Okay, so collateral damage when the planes were hit. Explain that to the American people with no certainty. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, thank you, and folks, keep listening and keep sharing information. It's the only real weapon we have left. Thank you very much.
This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and, well, we'll ask you to hold your calls, although we'll welcome them later on at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls. We have with us on the line Dr. Mark Geyer. We have David Geyer on the line. And we're going to be talking about autism. We're going to be talking about vaccinations and what they have uncovered about the relationship between vaccinations, the thimerosal in that, and the skyrocketing rates of autism. Dr. Geyer, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
David, are you there?
I'm here.
All right, fine. Well, thank you both so much for being with us. And let's get a little bit into the background of the studies you've been doing, because you've actually uncovered some material from the CDC that suggests that they know that there's a strong relationship between the thimerosal and the rise of autism. Would you like to talk a little bit about that? Or why don't you sort of let our listeners know a little bit about yourself, your background, and you're a geneticist, aren't you?
Yes, I'm an MD, PhD geneticist, board certified in genetics. I've worked at the National Institutes of Health for 10 years, and I've also been in private practice for the last 24 years doing genetics, and I've appeared before the Institute of Medicine of the National Academy of Sciences on 5 occasions, and have nearly 100 publications in the fields of genetics and vaccines.
So how did you get started looking into the background with the possibility that there might be some harmful effects from vaccines? Because, of course, when I was practicing medicine, I mean, I never questioned what I was told about vaccines. I mean, they were good. We had to give them. We'd stop disease. And there were really no or very, very few complications. So how did you get to begin to question the common thought among the medical profession?
I had the same experience you did, that it was not questioned, but I accidentally discovered that some of the vaccines had viral contaminations in the 1970s while I was at the NIH. And then I started measuring endotoxin levels in the vaccines later and discovered that they were very, very high, and spent many years changing or trying to get changed the vaccine called DPT to become DTAP. That means that it's an acellular pertussis. The old DPT used to cause every child to get sick, and the current one really is much, much more benign.
But this has been available for 20 years before they finally switched from the old DPT until the present one, didn't it?
Yeah, it took them at least, well, actually, they could have made it about 40 years ago. But 20 years ago, Japan switched after we taught them how to make it. And it was very difficult to watch our children suffer when actually all we had to do is buy it from Japan, and we finally switched, and now we buy it from Japan.
Well, let's get a little bit in the background of this skyrocketing rate of autism, because this, to me, is one of the most serious problems that we face today. What are we doing to the brains, to the future of our children? So would you like to pick up that story?
Well, I think we found an interesting thing since the last time we've talked to you, and that is we've come across the final report of the Congressional Committee on Government Reform, which has reported in the officially published the findings of a 3-year study, and they had people testify from CDC and scientists from all over the country, and they found, first of all, that the autism epidemic that we're undergoing right now is in all probability caused by the thimerosal and the vaccines. Secondly, that the CDC could have prevented or largely prevented it had they not been, quote, asleep at the switch. And the third thing they found is that CDC and FDA are guilty, as they call it, of institutional malfeasance in protecting themselves and the industry, and have not protected our children.
All right. Well, I think it's so vitally important that this information be brought out. That's why I do what I do, and I know that's why you are willing to appear on our programs, because this program is heard on at least 10 major stations across America, plus the shortwave, plus Internet. So what's the background of this report and your findings?
Go ahead, David. Why don't you comment on that one?
We were studying vaccines for a number of years.
All right. Would you speak up just a little louder, please, David?
My father and I were studying vaccines for a number of years, and we were analyzing a database called the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, or VAERS database. And we were at the time actually working with the CDC to analyze the safety of vaccines. They were helping us provide us with, you know, data from them to analyze the safety of vaccines. And beginning around the summer of 2002, parents started to come up to us, and they said that there was an alarming rise in the number of cases of autism in the United States. And they said that thimerosal in the vaccines had been going up as well, and they said that the two had been linked. And we responded by saying, you know, television watching has gone up in the last 10 years. You can't just simply say two things have gone up and say that they're linked. We told them to go away and that there were real problems with vaccines, and they basically had wishful thinking to think that vaccines were causing autism. But my father sort of calmed me down a little bit. I got very upset. They kept pestering us. And we started to look into, you know, the relationship between thimerosal and autism. We looked in our VAERS database. We looked at children that got thimerosal-containing diphtheria, tetanus, acellular pertussis, or DTaP vaccine in comparison to thimerosal-free DTaP vaccine. And when we did that, we found that the children that got the thimerosal-containing vaccine had 2 to 6 times as much autism and other neurodevelopmental disorders than those that got the thimerosal-free DTaP vaccine. And after we found those initial findings, we found out that the CDC had been studying the same issue, and they'd been studying it in their own private database called the Vaccine Safety Data Link, and they had found the exact same effect that we had been finding, except when they found the effect, they kept it private and secret and never told the public about this horrendous thing that they found. And so we, over the last year and a half, has been going around publishing additional articles in the peer-reviewed scientific literature, basically showing that there's a direct relationship between the amount of thimerosal children receive and the rate of neurodevelopmental disorders in the United States. And what's happened is that beginning around 1990 or 91, the amount of thimerosal, which is an ethyl mercury-containing preservative used in vaccines, tripled in the routine childhood immunization schedule. And when the amount of mercury tripled, the autism rate has gone up very similarly.
Well, that's a frightening thing to contemplate, that they've known this and yet they've suppressed this information. Now, why are they suppressing this? Why didn't they simply demand that the thimerosal be taken out of the vaccines to protect our children? I mean, we hear these reports from the NIH, we've just got to protect pregnant women from, eating swordfish and tuna fish because there's minuscule amounts of mercury there, and that might get into their child's brains and do some permanent harm, and yet they were giving vaccines laden with thimerosal to children in the nurseries, demanding that this be done and accusing parents, who wouldn't go along with it, virtually of almost child neglect. And yet they knew that this was harmful. What in heaven's name was behind? What motivated them? Or were they simply afraid to admit that vaccines might be harmful?
There was an internal conflict in their own organization. In 1999, they actually had a press release and announced that they were asking all the vaccine manufacturers to remove the thimerosal. They were asking but not demanding. Since that time, I think they've thought better of it, and although it has been removed from some vaccines, they have now made it clear that it's their policy to keep thimerosal in vaccines for the foreseeable future. And the reason that they say in their private memos that they're doing that is they need thimerosal in the third world countries, and if we stop using it, the third world countries will lose confidence in vaccines, and therefore they won't take their vaccines. And my comment to that is, I'm a big booster of the third world countries, but we're not going to suffer the damage that we're suffering in this country just to help the third world. A recent autism alarm from the FDA, CDC, and American Academy of Pediatrics states that the current rate of autism now is 1 in 166, and much more troubling, the current rate of neurodevelopmental disorders is 1 in 6. A little third grade arithmetic will show you that if that continues, there are about 300 million Americans in the country, if that continues, there will be 50 million Americans with brain damage, and we will not be the kind of country that we're used to being. That cannot be tolerated. To quote Congressman Weldon, that's a non-sustainable level. And we're not going to have them damage 50 million Americans simply to help their policy in third world countries.
Well, I think that it's so important for people to understand that the rate of autism used to be about 1 in, 10,000, and now it's 1 in, 165, something like that?
Yeah, the American Academy says 1 in 166, and Eli Lilly, who makes the thimerosal, says 1 in 150, so somewhere in that range.
All right. Well, that the other thing that I had read an article that you and your father had written, where you were talking about these other neurodegenerative or neuropathological conditions. You were talking about things like ADD and ADHD and metal deficiency. What other problems can we see with mercury? Can it damage the ability to remember, IQ, things like that?
Yeah, that's how you get from the 1 in 166 to 1 in 6. When you add up all the different things that it's causing, it probably adds up to 1 in 6 Americans, and that's with neurodevelopmental disorders. We have another problem in this country, which is that when I went to medical school, the rate of asthma was about 3 in 100. According to the New England Journal now, the rate of asthma is 25%. Now, I'm not positive that that's due to the thimerosal in the vaccines, but it's a very good candidate.
Well, could it also be just the response, the immunological response? We're stimulating the immunological response, and that, of course, we're priming the immune response to triggered asthma. Could that be what we're doing?
That could be, and this could all be studied very easily because the CDC has this wonderful database called Vaccine Safety Data Link. And they promised this to open this to researchers, particularly us. And we went in representing Congress. And we looked at their database, and we told the Institute of Medicine that we saw the link between thimerosal and autism in that database, and we wanted to go back and study it, comparing it to asthma and other chronic disorders. And within a week of our announcing that we had seen it, they have locked us out of the database and said that they will never let any outsiders ever look at this database again, even though, obviously, this database belongs to you and I. The United States taxpayers have paid $33 million for this database, and there's no reason in the world why we and other researchers can't look at it. There's no names, addresses, phone numbers, or any identifying information in there. It should be open to everybody, but of course, they're not too thrilled. The group at the CDC that are trying to cover up what happened are not too thrilled allowing this to be open. So now there's a big argument as to whether we're going to get ever again to see that database.
Why doesn't Congress just cut off their money and say, fine, you keep your key and you fund yourself? Because that's the only way that you're ever going to have any effect on these autocratic bureaucracies who think that they run the world, who know what's best for us common folk.
Yeah, I think there is now pressure on them. In fact, Dr. Weldon was questioning the CDC, and in fact, the CDC now has the nerve to recommend that all children now have to take influenza vaccine, which contains thimerosal, which is going to, again, raise the level of thimerosal. And Dr. Weldon has published in the LA Times that he thinks it's medical malpractice to give children any vaccines with thimerosal. But the CDC's policy is shortly that they're going to try to force children to take thimerosal-containing influenza vaccine. So we're at a fighting point at this point.
I think that our listeners need to know that Dr. Weldon is actually a congressman, isn't he?
Yes, he's a congressman from Florida.
All right.
Republican
so.
Congressman from Florida. And he's one of many now that are taking up this cause. And he's now introduced a bill in the U.S. Congress to ban thimerosal in all childhood vaccines. And in fact, there's been a bill introduced in several states to do the same thing. In Iowa, it has passed both the House and the Senate and now sits on the governor's desk, hopefully to be signed into law, that Iowa will not allow thimerosal-containing vaccines. Missouri has passed through one of their houses and most of the way through the second house, and they probably within a week or two will also ban thimerosal. So there's a lot of action going on now. We're not alone. There are many scientists coming to our aid and now many politicians who feel that there's no way that this poison should be in our children's vaccines.
But, of course, we keep reading these planted articles in the New York Times and other establishment publications saying, oh, but the experts say, and then, of course, they'll just mention very casually, Dr. Mark Geyer has said, oh, yes, well, the majority of the scientific knowledge, and I'm sure you've read these articles, doesn't that just get your blood pressure going up?
It certainly does, and in fact, the one article they had on their side, which was published by Dr. Verstappen this fall, Dr. Verstappen has now written a letter explaining that article, and he says the article does not argue that thimerosal does not cause it. He says his article is neutral. So all they have is opinions. They have no published papers really at all that are directly relevant to the issue on the side of it not causing. And there are hundreds, maybe thousands of papers coming out all the time from all over the world now supporting the idea that thimerosal is causing.
Well, it's almost as if, they don't care about our children. And I think any parent who cares about their children or their grandchildren should understand what's going on and should help us to get this information out, which is, of course, what we do here at Radio Liberty. Well, if you wanted to destroy a nation, is there a better way to do it than what they're doing?
I mean, the most important, in my view, the most important resource is not our oil or our lumber or our food. The most important resource we have is our children's brains. And they're destroying a whole generation. Even if we stop today, they've destroyed an enormous amount. And if there was a terrorist that did this, and we found out, we wouldn't attack their country like we did in Iraq. We'd nuke them. If they damage 50 million Americans, we'd kill every one of them. And yet this is being done internally in the United States.
Well, I anybody who's read my book, AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, will recall my story about going to the CDC, and I certainly wasn't very convinced that these people were really interested in preserving the public health. Now, so we're in a situation now where they're really demanding or insisting that every child, if you really care about your children, you're going to give them a thimerosal injection, and that they're insisting that old people get this, elderly people, who because they have a decreased immune system, and yet there is a full dose of thimerosal in the vaccine, in the influenza vaccine, isn't there?
Yes.
What is the amount that's allowed, and what's the amount of that's in that vaccine? I've heard that sometimes there are 50 times the minimal amount or the maximum amount you can have. What's the story there?
David, maybe you can go through that for us.
What's going on is that the Environmental Protection Agency has set limits for exposure to mercury. They've set a very simple limit to understand, which is 0.1 micrograms of mercury per kilogram body weight per day. So back when virtually all the vaccines administered to children had thimerosal, newborn infants were administered hepatitis B vaccine on the day of birth. They weighed about 3 kilograms, which is equal to about 6 or 7 pounds. They got the hepatitis B that had 12.5 micrograms, so they were approximately 40-fold in excess of that safety guideline on the day of birth.
And mercury is very toxic to the brain, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. And used to get worse. At 2 months of age, children were administered 62.5 micrograms from a DTP and a HIV vaccine, a hepatitis B vaccine, and they weighed at 2 months about 5 kilograms, which is a little over 10 pounds. So they were allowed 0.5, and they received 62.5, so they were over 100-fold in excess of the safety guideline. And, of course, relating to the influenza vaccine, that has 25 micrograms per dose. An adult weighs maybe 160 or 170 pounds. That's about 80 kilograms. So they're allowed about 8 micrograms. And they receive 25. So they're roughly 3 or 4-fold over that safety guideline from just a single influenza shot.
But, of course, what about when the child gets it? Why, it's just way out of proportion.
Yeah, it's going to be 25, 30, 40 times over what they're allowed.
Well, you know, is there any way that legal action can be taken against the Centers for Disease Control? You know, there is sort of a rotation out of many of the various government agencies, like the FDA, and I assume it goes to the CDC, too, where, of course, you can get a nice, fat job when you leave government with industry if you do the right sort of thing. Is there any way to bring a RICO charge against the vaccine manufacturers and or the government?
There's a bunch of people now looking into various kinds of criminal and civil charges at the moment.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to take a break here. And when we get back, of course, we'll welcome your calls for Dr. Mark Geyer and for David Geyer. I've read their articles, and they're really very, very informative, and perhaps we can find out about their website where you can get this information, too. If you care about your children or you care about your grandchildren, understand that they're being poisoned with mercury, a very, very lethal type of poison that affects the brain. And there are people who know exactly what's going on, and they're concealing it from the American people. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Dr. Mark Geyer, Dr. David. David, are you working on your doctorate?
Yeah, I'm actually a graduate student at George Washington University in biochemistry right now.
All right, fine. Well, it'll take a little while, but you keep after it and get that medical degree, too, because it's so important in the scientific field when you've got those initials behind your name. It may not mean you're any smarter, but it sure looks a lot better when you're in the discussion, and especially when you're having to stand for righteousness against people that seem to have a different agenda. Well, do you have a site or a place where people can get information?
Probably the best place to go, we don't have a personal website, but a very informative website for this is at www.nomercury.org. At that website, they have a list of, or have our many of our publications available, and they have many of the publications from other researchers who are currently examining the relationship between thimerosal neurodevelopmental disorders.
Now, who puts that website up?
That's put up by Dr. Alan Clark from Missouri. They're involved This website also has information about the state-by-state campaign to ban thimerosal. The Clarks are involved in banning, helping to get thimerosal banned in Missouri.
Well, I think that's wonderful, and it's going to have to be done at a grassroots level. I fear, even though there are many congressmen who are concerned about this, it almost appears that the bureaucracy runs Congress rather than Congress running the bureaucracy, and the only way to really stand up to them is to cut off their money, and they usually don't have the courage to do that. Well, now, you mentioned that one reason that they justify leaving the thimerosal in the vaccines is because they have to have thimerosal in the vaccines in Africa, and that would be because they'd have poor refrigeration. So why couldn't they just go ahead and put one shot in each bottle? It's a concern about contaminating a bottle because of using poor techniques for vaccinations in Africa. Wouldn't it be cheaper, a lot cheaper, either provide adequate needles and good vaccination technique so that this would not be a problem, or to simply put one shot in one bottle so this would not be a problem, and then take the thimerosal out?
Well, the single-dose vial solution, according to WHO, is too expensive for the third world countries. I think that's a very short-term view, in the sense that, yes, it costs more than making multi-dose vials, but considering the amount of damage you're doing to the population, the current estimate of the damage already done to the United States, and this is from the U.S. Congressional estimates, is about $20 trillion. That's with a T, not a B, dollars. So, yeah, it would have cost, you know, some more to make single-dose vials, but in the long run, it's a bargain. But that's not their view, that's my view.
But what about the brains of the children in Africa that you're damaging with these toxic doses of thimerosal? Are they concerned what they're doing to the children there?
It's hard to say, but their position is they can't afford single-dose vials. They have to have multi-dose vials. And as I say, when you damage children anywhere, the cost is enormous. Clearly, the cost to the world of damaging any of the children is far more than going to single-dose vials, but that they have made the decision not to do that.
Well, where do they get off being allowed to make life and death decisions? Where do they get off the right to make the judgment for the parents of the children in Africa? Do you think if the parents knew that their children's brains were going to be harmed, that they would take the vaccines? And is this playing some part in what we're seeing increasingly in Africa, where people are refusing to take vaccines because they don't trust the World Health Organization? And hold your answers. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Dr. Mark Geyer and his son, David Geyer. We're talking about the damage that has been done by thimerosal injections in the vaccines that have been used. And the figure that has been estimated by Congress that's investigated this was that figure $30 trillion damage to the brains and minds of our children?
Yeah, $20 trillion.
$20 trillion, yeah. Okay. I want to make sure that we have that right. Well, 20 or 30 trillion, 20 trillion is just an unbelievable amount of money when you figure the entire value of all the property and stocks in the United States is about 7 trillion. You're talking about 20 trillion, you're talking about just an unbelievable amount of damage. Now, what is Congress going to do about it? Are they going to cut off the funding for the CDC or what?
Well, there are various attempts to look into ethics violations and other violations at the CDC. As I said, there's also a bill that has been introduced. It's a bipartisan bill in the House, introduced by a Republican and a Democrat, to ban thimerosal in all vaccines forever. Whether that'll pass in the House, in the U.S. House and Senate, there's tremendous pressure by Big Pharma. I mean, they contribute to Democrats, Republicans, liberals, conservatives. It's going to be very difficult, I think, to get it passed in the House and the Senate. And I don't know if the President would sign it, but I think that's one route to go. And the other one is to have these people investigated, and there are various kinds of investigations currently underway. The first investigation was a 3-year hearing by the House of Representatives, which resulted in a conclusion that the CDC and FDA are guilty of institutional malfeasance for what they've done, which is That's a pretty strong statement.
Well, it really is. And, of course, what's even more frightening is that I read the New York Times and the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal on a regular basis, and I've never seen that mentioned at all. Where is this information getting out that Congress has suggested the institutional malfeasance? Is this being more or less kept in reports in some dark corner where nobody will ever see them?
Well, I think that's what they're trying to do, but I mean, it's officially published in the federal, documents.
I mean, but who reads federal documents?
Yeah.
You know, unless you can get on the internet and know where to find them. And sometimes even when you get on the internet, you can't find them. Sometimes I've spent days looking for things and had to be actually guided to them.
Well, we and the parents and the various groups that are supporting this are now trying to make it very public. In all honesty, we weren't aware of that conclusion. That was published last May. And we were given a very weak summary of it, which did not have those words in it. And when we finally saw the official document, we've been trying to publicize it everywhere. It's the official position of the U.S. Congress.
How could the average listener out here get a copy of that? Or is that up on this website, nomercury.org, that you mentioned?
Yeah, it's available at nomercury.org. We've also, I should mention this, that there are state attorney generals looking into this matter as well. The concept behind their looking into it is that they might sue on behalf of their state, much like the state sued about the tobacco.
Well, that sounds like a great idea. You know, when they put through the, I think it was the, I guess the Office of Homeland Security bill, why they tried to sneak something in there under the direction of the president and that would actually give the, I guess it was Eli Lilly, who manufactures thimerosal, a get-out-of-litigation-free card so that they could never be sued over the thimerosal. Had nothing to do with Homeland Security. It was put on in the middle of the night when nobody knew about it. And it was only really because of the tremendous outcry from parents all across the country that the Bush administration was forced to withdraw this this legislation, which would have meant that nothing could have ever been done to Eli Lilly for what they had done, knowing full well the toxic effect of thimerosal on the brains of our children.
In fact, that was passed with the Homeland Security Act, and then they had to pass another bill to unpass it.
In other words, it actually became law. For about a month, you actually technically could not sue Eli Lilly.
Well, I would think that Eli Lilly would do everything they could to block any lawsuits, because if the individual states started suing Eli Lilly, they'd end just like Philip Morris did.
Yeah, I agree. And it's interesting that there were a couple of heroes that made sure that bill was overturned. You would think that the president, you know, to overturn it, once you have a law, you have to have another law to overturn it, and you'd think that maybe the president wouldn't sign it. And as it turned out, they were threatening not to overturn it. But there were three Republican senators who said, if you don't overturn this, we're going to walk from the Republican side to the Democratic side, and you're going to lose control of the Senate. And that's what forced them to undo it.
Now, who were the senators, you recall?
There were two from Maine. Do you know the other name, David?
I'm not sure. They're the liberal-leaning Republicans. I think Jeffords is one. I don't remember off the top.
Well,
and
anyway,
there was two
I
from
think
Maine, and the other one was from New England as well. And they forced it to be overturned.
Well, I think I certainly congratulate them, because I think that we have to keep this on the front burner. And the only way we may ever be able to get it out is a threat of litigation. I hate to think of that, but unfortunately, sometimes you have to resort to that. We'll be back here in just a moment with our special guest this evening. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I don't know where that music came from, but it sort of snuck in there. Well, anyway, our special guest this evening, Dr. Mark Geyer, his son David Geyer, and we're talking about the thimerosal that's in the vaccines. And if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And I think this is such an important issue. If we're talking about 1 in 5 or 1 in 6 children having a permanent brain damage as a result of this, this is unconscionable, because down the line this will destroy America. And think of the what it's doing to the children in Africa. Now, I've heard, and I did an interview with a friend of mine this afternoon, Dr. Russell Blaylock, that although they said that the thimerosal was removed from the vaccines, when a certain people got hold of the vaccines and had it tested, there was still a great deal of thimerosal in there, and they said, oh, well, we've taken out of the new vaccines, but we wanted to use up the old stock. In other words, we didn't want to throw any vaccines, then we're going to continue poisoning the children until all the vaccine stocks are gone. Is that true? Did they do something like that?
It's worse than that. In addition to that, they're still making it. They're making it in a number of vaccines that are right today. They have no intention of taking it out. The influenza vaccines, for example, that are now going to be recommended or required for the children, haven't even been made yet, and most of them are going to be made with thimerosal. There are several other vaccines that are currently made only with thimerosal, not without. So they not only used up the old stock, but they have no intention of even following through on their promise of removing them, as far as we can tell, eventually.
Well, now, what are the vaccines that still have it in there? Because I want to be able to, people come to me all the time and ask for my advice, and I need to know which vaccines will continue to have thimerosal in them. And, of course, what happens is that the patients say to their doctor, well, you know, I'm concerned about the thimerosal, and the doctor will say, well, I've been told that thimerosal has been removed from all the vaccines. There's nothing to worry about. You know, trust me. And I always say, well, before you trust them, get hold of the package insert and read it very carefully. So what vaccines still have it in there?
The vaccines that have thimerosal include certain formulations of meningococcal vaccine, diphtheria tetanus or DT vaccine, tetanus diphtheria or TD vaccine, tetanus toxoid vaccine, Japanese encephalitis virus vaccine, certain formulations of the hepatitis B vaccine still have it, as well as we've heard repeatedly, the influenza vaccine still has it in many formulations.
So an awful lot of the regular childhood vaccines are going to continue to have it, and they really don't care what the... Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and we've just been talking with Dr. Mark Geyer and David Geyer. And, of course, the vaccine manufacturers, when confronted with the fact that they were poisoning our children, said they were going to take it out. But Dr. Geyer or David, I'm not sure which it was, said that it is still in the meningococcal or many of the formulations of meningococcal vaccine, the diphtheria tetanus, the DPT, the tetanus toxoid, the Japanese encephalitis, encephalitis vaccine, certain of the hepatitis B and the influenza vaccine. So it's still there. And if you think that they're telling you the truth when they tell you they've taken it out, why, I suggest you have an obligation to actually get the package insert and look and see what it says. Will the package insert usually be fairly honest?
Well, we have questions about that, but the first thing is that we've been telling parents to look at the vial that it comes in, because it always said on the vial whether there was thimerosal in there or not. You know what their response was?
What?
They don't put it on the vial anymore. Now it's on the box and the package insert, but not on the vial. And the doctors usually throw the boxes away, and they show you the vial. So the vial no longer says it. So now you have to get the box, and you have to get the package insert, and you got to hope that the labeling is correct. And that sounds like a terrible thing to say, but it turns out that Dennis Pasteur has admitted that their labeling does not necessarily reflect what's in the vial. Additionally, the WHO memos that we have say that the fact that something is preservative-free does not necessarily mean that it's thimerosal-free, and thimerosal can be in vaccines and other products, by the way, many other products, without ever being listed anywhere.
Now, my understanding is that one reason that thimerosal is in the vaccines is because it's a lot cheaper to manufacture it that way. That way they don't have to be so concerned about sterility. And if they have the thimerosal in there, they hope it'll kill the bacteria or viruses or other organisms of that sort. Is that true?
That's the main reason that it was in originally, yes. Although they may claim that it may help as a preservative, but it turns out they did a study, and David can even give you the quote for it.
It was a study done by the CDC back in 1985 in pediatrics, where they took vials of vaccine that had thimerosal as a preservative, and they introduced known amounts of bacteria, and they took samples out and showed that the thimerosal didn't kill the bacteria. So in other words, it wasn't functioning as a preservative. And they even did a cost, you know, analysis where they showed it was cheaper to keep using multi-dose vials that had thimerosal that didn't work than to switch to single-dose vials that didn't have thimerosal. It's interesting also in this same paper, the authors described that one of the alternatives that could be done, since thimerosal at the level that is currently used in vaccines doesn't work, is that they could go up in the amount of thimerosal, up in the concentration that is. And they discussed that you couldn't do that because if you went up, you'd risk harm to those receiving the vaccine. As I said before, what we actually did, we didn't go up in each vial, we went up in the number of shots. So we actually tripled the amount of mercury children were getting, but just not in one vial, but from multiple different shots, basically more than one vial.
Well, now, Chris, some of these children are getting six different vaccines in one sitting there. And, of course, with those six different vaccines, aren't they getting just terribly lethal doses or tremendous doses of thimerosal? And I'm speaking of this as the way it was before we supposedly took the thimerosal out.
Yeah, that's right.
As David calculated for you before, they were getting up to 140, sometimes even more than that, times what the EPA says is a safe level.
Well,
I mean, that's impressive.
Where's the EPA when we need them?
Well, the EPA has been yelling and screaming about this. They're very upset. But as they point out, that's not their area of jurisdiction. They can tell you what's safe, but they're not charged with approving the vaccines. That's FDA and CDC.
So in other words, they're very concerned when the mercury is sitting in the vial of vaccine, you know, on the doctor's office shelf, and then they're concerned after the patient excretes it out in their urine, and they're very concerned when the doctor throws away the used up vial. But when the mercury is directly injected into you, it's not under their jurisdiction. It's under that of the FDA.
I sometimes think we live in a world gone mad, and other times I'm quite convinced we are. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment, there's no two people I know who know more about this issue of the toxicity and the poisoning of our children, toxicity of the mercury and the poisoning of our children with this by vaccines than Dr. Mark Geyer and David Geyer, our guests. So if you're out there in the listening audience and you have a question or a comment, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. If you'd like to get to some of the writings of Dr. Geyer and of David, why go to www.nomercury.org. That's nomercury.org. Apparently that's a website put out by Dr. Alan Clark, who's trying to get the various states to outlaw the use of thimerosal in vaccines. And you can imagine, of course, the furor that this will cause, because there's a lot of money in this, and then, well, there may be other agendas here as well, although it would be almost frightening to contemplate, and we are better to stay away from trying to explain the illogic of what's going on today and just saying this is what's happening, they're poisoning our children, are you concerned? We've got somebody calling in here, we'll have them on the line in just a moment, and of course Dr. Geyer's articles I've read in the Journal of the American Associations of Physicians and Surgeons, and now, one of the things that you had pointed out, in fact, you were quoted in an Insight magazine article, you commented that there's all this fuss about getting the vaccinations for influenza, but isn't there some sort of a medicine you can get that will simply take care of or prevent the flu or the influenza?
Absolutely. There are several medicines, the best of which is Tamiflu, which works no matter which strain of A or B influenza you get. And as you probably know, this year's vaccine was the wrong strain. And fairly recently, well, actually quite a while ago, the CDC has now determined the efficacy of last year's influenza vaccine, which according to their statistics was zero. So they sold us $1 billion worth of vaccine, which incidentally they knew from the start was the wrong vaccine. In addition, they didn't recommend using the medicine. And additionally, the epidemic that they claimed really wasn't that big an epidemic, and in fact, they have their minutes actually show that they plan to make sure that they make a big deal of the epidemic so they could sell all the doses. And as soon as they sold all the doses, they stopped yelling about the epidemic. This is very scary, because what if it really was a bad epidemic and we didn't have the right vaccine and they didn't tell you to take the medicine? Then we could lose lots of people.
And I think what's so frightening is I remember how they created a hysteria. Oh, we're almost out of vaccine. It's not going to be available. You better get these shots while they're available. And they knew it didn't work. They just didn't want you to know it didn't work. So you got your mercury injection. And, well, let's go to Greg, who's calling from Santa Cruz, California. Hi, Greg. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine.
You have a question?
Yeah, I do. I'm wondering why, and I understand the toxicity level, and I think it was in the Wall Street Journal a couple of weeks back. I did read an article reporting on that toxicity level of these preservatives, but my question is this. Why can't they use, and we know they have these solar-powered lights that have emergency call stands on the roadways, why couldn't they use something like that for a similar 1 to 2 gallon refrigeration unit to keep these multiple dosage vials refrigerated?
You're talking about in Africa?
Yes, exactly. They could carry those, and that would not be too expensive, and then they could get that without the preservative and save a lot of lives.
All right. Would you like to respond to that? Did you get the question there?
I understood the question, and have an amazing answer. They have told us that it's not just a matter of refrigeration. They've told us that they have very few needles, and they use them over and over again. And at first we heard that and we thought, gee, that's terrible because, you know, it's gonna recontaminate things. But then, you know, we thought of another thing. You know, you can't use the same needle over and over again because people there have AIDS. And if you inject one with AIDS and you inject the next one, you can spread AIDS.
And you wonder why, with all the money we're spending, we just can't provide those needles. I mean, they cost a couple of cents each. And instead of trying to prevent the spread of this and stopping the repeated use of contaminated needles, why we spend hundreds of millions of dollars telling them about safe sex and condoms, and nothing makes sense, at least. Maybe you ought to read my book, AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, and you might get some of the answers. Anything else, Greg?
No, I agree, and I think that the disposable needle is a very, very inexpensive solution to that, plus along with a small solar-powered refrigeration unit which would counteract their argument of they can't afford to have the single doses, that they could have these multiple doses to keep them refrigerated and use disposable needles, and that seems that it would be a very inexpensive way to solve the problem.
Thank you, sir. I agree with you,
but unfortunately I'm not the person that makes the decision.
All right, thanks very much, Greg. What you're doing is you're trying to be logical, and what we're talking about is nothing is logical. That's what's so frightening.
I agree.
Bye-bye.
I'm listening
Godless.
To you.
Bye-bye.
I enjoy it. Thank
okay.
you.
All right, Philo, it was great calling from Santa Cruz, and if you're out there listening across America, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, and I think a point that was just raised, they are still using these needles over and over again. Now, when you do this, why you spread hepatitis B, you spread hepatitis C, you spread HIV disease. We know that in China, they have got 200 million people infected with hepatitis B, most of it from the use of dirty needles when they were doing vaccinations. It's estimated that throughout the world, there are about 200 million people infected with hepatitis C. And how did they get it? Why the use of dirty needles? Because they didn't want to put out 1 or 2 cents for the vaccination. Oh, we're from the World Health Organization. We're here to help you. You have to have these vaccines. Just roll up your sleeve, and we're not going to tell you. We're going to use a dirty needle. And, well, let's go to Gloria calling from Washington. Hi, Gloria. How are you doing?
Hi. I just have a question for your guest. Do you know if there is the ability to order an MMR separate, like a measles month? And rubella in 3 separate?
Yes, you can. In the United States, you can get them separated, and that's not a bad idea to separate them. It's a good idea for children, probably, probably safer than giving them all together. And also, it's important for other reasons. For example, if you're a woman considering pregnancy and you're not immune to rubella, you should probably be vaccinated against rubella, since rubella in first trimester pregnancy causes a lot of problems. But If you're not careful and you go to your doctor, they won't give you the rubella shot. They'll give you the MMR shot. You don't need the MMR shot. You just need the R shot.
And the thing is that men don't need the rubella shot and women don't need the mumps shot. So.
Right.
Oh, well, my daughter has been told, and she's been trying to do research over in the Seattle area, that they don't have the ability to order these separately.
That's
she's
not
called
correct.
Every doctor in her area over there on the west side of the state.
In England, you cannot get them separated.
In the United States, it's not easy, but they are available separately.
How would she order these or get these?
David, do you know which company makes them separate?
They're only made by one company. It's made by Merck. You can document it if you get the 2004 version of the PDR. Look under the vaccine section. You can see that they have the individual components of the MMR vaccine available.
And that's Merck Company. So that's does that answer your question, Gloria?
Yes, thank you so much.
Okay, thanks
Bye-bye.
So much for calling. Bye-bye. And where's that was Gloria?
We're calling from Spokane.
In Washington, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And this is such an important issue. Now, have you had any pressure brought to bear upon you? Because certainly what you're doing is pointing out the total malfeasance on the part of our certain government agencies. I don't suppose you're very popular in certain circles.
We used to work with people from the CDC, and now they won't cooperate with us. They won't let us into their database. And, you know, the American Academy of Pediatrics has an unsigned attack on us and our work on their website, which is amazing because we have documents that show that several years before we suggested it, the American Academy of Pediatrics themselves said doctors should be told about the catastrophe, it should be removed immediately, and if it isn't, it's going to cause brain damage. But the one thing that they disagree with us is they think that should be secret, and I think it has to be public.
Well, I think there's a tremendous fear out there that, you know, if the public ever realized the terrible damage that's been done by some vaccines, and as you well know, that certainly the original polio vaccine created polio, and then when they got that cleaned up, why, the polio vaccine that they gave us grown in the kidney of a green monkey, I guess it was a rhesus monkey, gave us simian virus, and then when they switched to the green monkey, we got all the green monkey viruses, and they're afraid that the American people ever learn the truth about the danger of vaccines, of some vaccines, or the mistakes that have been made, why we would not take any vaccines at all, so they continue to lie to us. And this is what's happened in Africa. The people in Africa don't trust them anymore, and because of that, they're not going to take the vaccines, and there will be some terrible consequences because they're not taking them. So it's sort of a catch-22, and it's really been generated by this effort at secrecy. Would you think that would be true?
I agree with that, and when I addressed the Institute of Medicine just a couple of months ago, my concluding remarks were that nobody can accuse me of being anti-vaccine. I've published many papers, you know, suggesting that vaccine should be continued and improved, but I told them that if they continue to try to cover up what has happened on the guise of protecting the vaccine program, they're not going to have a vaccine program because the people are going to become so are going to lose so much confidence in them that they're not going to take the vaccines at all, and then people are going to die of avoidable infectious disease.
And I think it's absolutely true. And the tragedy is that when you tell a lie, then you've got to tell another lie to cover for the lie that you told, and then you've got to cover another lie to cover for the second lie that you've told. And unless you're an awfully good liar, why, you're not going to remember all the lies that you've told beforehand. And this is exactly what's happening with the people who are pushing the vaccines. They have benefits. There are wonderful things that have been accomplished. Doing away with polio, doing away with smallpox, these are amazing things that I've witnessed during my lifetime. But when I see these other things and the skyrocketing incidence of juvenile diabetes and of asthma and of autism, what about juvenile diabetes? Have you looked at all into the why we're getting so much juvenile diabetes? Is there any studies been done on that and the relationship to the vaccines?
I think that the study could easily be done from that database that they're denying us. I think that Dimerosal is again a good candidate. In fact, there's one more thing it's a good candidate for. It's known to cause immune disruption, which means it could be related to asthma. It's known to affect insulin levels, which means it could be related to diabetes. And interestingly enough, you probably don't realize that it may also be related to the obesity epidemic because it inhibits leptin, and leptin controls obesity. In fact, the standard assay for leptin is to show that it's sensitive to mercury.
Well, there are a lot of strange things going on today. We're going to be back here in just a moment to wrap up the program, and we'll have about 3 minutes, and we'll ask you to both chip in and tell us your thoughts and thoughts you'd like to leave with the American people. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening has been Dr. Mark Geyer and his son, David Geyer. You really should get a copy of this tape this evening and duplicate it and get it to your friends and get it to your children and, you know, anybody who's having children who are facing this quandary of vaccinations, and just ask them the question, are you willing to risk your child's future and their brain development and mental deficiency and other problems, you know, just to go along because you're afraid to stand up and say to your doctor, I'm not going to do this. What are your thoughts, parting thoughts, Dr. Geyer? And then we'll ask David to give his parting thoughts.
I think that this has gone so far now that, first of all, that thimerosal must be banned in all vaccines, whether it be done nationally or whether it be done state by state. Personally, it's a lot of travel for me to go to all these states, but if we have to do it state by state, we'll do it. And the second thing is, the people who've made this decision, and when we say CDC and FDA, we're talking about 12 people or so, a small group, not the whole CDC. We love the other people in the CDC. This small group that has made these bad decisions have to understand that they have a personal responsibility. They can't just go off having damaged the whole United States and go off on some new project. They have to realize that there are consequences to taking money from the drug companies and making decisions based upon their own interests and those of the drug companies rather than the people that they were hired to protect. Until that happens, we're going to be at risk for future things as well.
I agree with you totally. David, what are your parting thoughts?
I'd recommend that the parents out there listening should be extremely careful when they give vaccines to their children, that they should go and get the vials, get the boxes, and get the package inserts and make sure that the vaccines that they're administering to their children genuinely are thimerosal-free products.
Well, now, I think there's a tendency on the part of a lot of people when they go to the doctor to be a little cowed. And, you know, some doctors certainly are very kind and sympathetic and understand the parents' concern, but I don't think the average doctor, because he's not reading about these things and he doesn't have time to read all of the research on this and go to the website, the doctor's going to have to be taught by the patients, and you're going to have to get the facts and get to your doctor and educate them because they're sure never going to be educated through their professional organizations. Would you agree with that?
I agree with that. I think the doctors are the other victims. I think that they have been lied to. Almost every doctor I know cares deeply about the children that he takes care of, and he's been told, and when questioned on this, he'll pick up the phone and call the CDC, and they'll say, oh, there's no problem. And that's a good idea, except in this particular subject, you can't call the CDC or the FDA because they're the ones that are being accused by the U.S. Congress of institutional malfeasance. So their opinions on this are not the way to go. The doctors have to wake up and realize that they've been lied to, just like the parents have been lied to.
Well, I want to thank both of you for being with us this evening. It's been a great program, and God bless you both. Thanks so very much, and hang in there. We'll do everything we can to help you get this information out.
Thank you for inviting us.
Good night. Bye-bye. Okay,
bye-bye.
Fine. Well, we've had David Geyer and Dr. Mark Geyer and David Geyer is our guest this last hour, and I hope you've enjoyed the program. I hope that you'll want to get a copy of the tape of this program, that you'll go to the website, nomercury.org, that's nomercury.org, and get the information, get their articles, take them to your doctor, get him educated, and insist that he has an obligation to find out if what you're saying is true. Get him a copy of the audio tape, and I hope when he listens to this audio tape and reads those articles, why, he will become as concerned as I am. Because I don't know any doctor who would want to harm a child. And yet that's exactly what we're doing with the current vaccine program. So this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours every day. And you can listen to our programs on the American Freedom Network, first thing in the morning at 7 o'clock Pacific Time, our first afternoon program at 3 o'clock Pacific Time at gcnlive.com, and then our the third program at radioliberty.com, and there's 2 hours at radioliberty.com. We're 2 hours a day, actually 4 hours a day now on shortwave for people who don't have computers. So you can listen to our programs at www.radioliberty.com. And then, of course, you can link to the other websites, the other internets that carry us. or you can certainly listen to us on shortwave 4 hours a day at 5.745 megahertz. And it's all there up on our website, the exact time we're on. Tell other people about our programs. Encourage them to go to our website and look at the various products we carry, which do help us to some extent. And then pull down our newsletters and get the documentation. If you need the original source of what we're telling you, why it's all there, and if you can't find it, we'll be glad to send it to you. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, our March newsletter tells you what happened at the secret meetings, the secret cabinet meetings in the White House in January and February of the year 2001. That's 8 to 9 months before the 9/11 attack. And so if you'd like to know what was going on there, why, give us a call, ask for the March newsletter. We'll be glad to send it to you. Because we simply quote from Paul O'Neill's book, The Price of Loyalty. And his book was roundly attacked, but you know the most amazing thing? Is that they never told you what was taking place at those cabinet meetings. And we simply quote what Paul O'Neill wrote in his book, The Price of Loyalty. And when you contemplate what's happening in Iraq today, and you know what they were talking about then, why, you'll be shocked and horrified, and I hope you'll be infuriated. And, of course, the people who were talking there are part of a secret little group called the Project for the New American Century. You can go to their website, newamericancentury.org, and find there's a small group that control this government, and they controlled it long before George Bush was ever elected. Look at their website, newamericancentury.org. Check the facts. Find if it could be true. Get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and understand how this all fits together, because, ladies and gentlemen, there really are organizations that work within the shadows that have an agenda. And what is that agenda? Why, it's a new world order and a new world religion. And what we're going to see is America being progressively bankrupt by sending our industries offshore, by outsourcing our jobs, by lowering the value of our dollar, and then, of course, by spending billions and billions, hundreds of billions of dollars on this futile attempt to bring democracy to the people of Iraq, who don't want democracy. Unfortunately, they have a different culture. And if you want to understand what it's about, you need to read Samuel Huntington's book, The Class of Civilizations. And as he says in his book, he's professor of history at Harvard, if you want to get a third world war going, get involved in a fight with the Islamic world, and they'll all join against you. And I fear that we're going to inflame the passions and anger of 1.5 billion Muslims, and heaven help us at that time. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until tomorrow, when we'll be back with you again at this same station, may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But hold your calls for a moment or two. We're going to hopefully have Joel Skousen with us. But just in case he doesn't show up, why, we'll have to have open lines. So let me just start out by talking about the latest newsletter. We're going into the background of what came out of the commission, the 911 commission hearings. And you must understand that this commission was opposed by the president. He opposed the initial investigation by the Joint House-Senate Intelligence Committee, the so-called Select Committee investigation, and insisted on actually censoring the ultimate report, and they took out all the pages having to do with Saudi Arabia. There were 28 pages about their involvement, financing Al-Qaeda and financing the terrorist attack on America. But we couldn't let the American people know that because, after all, the Saudis invested over $800 billion in the United States. The overall value of all holdings here is felt to be about $7 trillion, and they've got, well, almost $860 billion. If they were to pull their money out, why, America would topple tomorrow. So the Bush administration removed any reference to the fact that they were behind, at least to help finance this whole world terrorist movement. And then you've heard about the 28 pages that were censored. You've never heard about the fact that there was censorship on about every third page. I actually counted 200 pages in the report of the 900 pages, and at least on 75 is the 200 pages, or 76 of the 200 pages I counted, why there were deletions there. Something was deleted. The administration insisted on censoring the report. Now, why would they want to censor the report? Are they trying to keep Osama bin Laden, who's living in a cave someplace? At least, are they telling us that he's still alive? I don't know whether he is or not. All we know is what we read in the newspaper, and the CIA keeps saying he's alive. He could long since been dead, but you need to have somebody to hate. And Osama bin Laden's a very, very convenient individual to hate, isn't he? So, but basically the tragedy that we have is that after the report came out and it had been so carefully censored that nothing could be found, there was a group of wives of men who died in the Twin Towers attack, and they were called the Jersey Girls. There were four of them. Two of the names come to mind. One was Kristen Breitweiser. And the other was Mindy Kleinberg, and we've actually reproduced their testimony in our newsletters because we thought it was so important and because it was blacked out by the controlled medium. But they insisted that we needed another report, and they kept calling the congressmen and calling the senators, and eventually there was tremendous pressure to actually have a report, an independent report, and so the 911 commission was appointed. But what happened when the 911 commission was appointed is the president insisted that he be able to appoint one of the co-chairmen, and actually the man he appointed has turned up to be the chairman of the committee, and then they've put this committee together in such a manner that they can block anybody from testifying. They've had over 1,000 people have been interviewed, and very few of them have been allowed to testify publicly. They interview them in private, and then if they have anything really important to say, why they're not allowed to testify in public, because the last thing that these people want is for the American people to know what really happened on September 11th. You'll want to get our latest newsletter. It's got a lot of great information, and of course, next month, why, we'll tell you what really happened on the morning of September 11th. At least what we've been able to get from the testimony, and of course, one thing about the commission, even though they're doing everything to suppress the information, some of the truth is coming out, the truth that is not being covered by the New York Times, the Washington Post, or the Wall Street Journal. With that as a background, let's go to our special guest this evening, Joel Skousen, editor of World Affairs Brief. Hi, Joel. How are you doing?
Just fine, Dr. Stan. I guess they had some technical problems getting in touch with me.
Right. Well, I'm glad we got you, because I was going to have to talk for the full hour about the monologue. Anyway, I know that you have a lot prepared, having just finished your World Affairs Brief. For our listeners, why you can get Joel Skousen's World Affairs Brief either on a monthly basis or every week on email. Why don't we, before we go ahead, why don't you tell our listeners how they can get your World Affairs Brief, which I think is one of the two most important publications I get every week.
Well, the World Affairs Brief contains my unique analysis of the news, and it isn't just a reporting of the news. I give my take on what I think is happening behind the scenes. It does come out weekly by email. There's also a weekly printed edition, but it doesn't get mailed and typeset and printed until the end of each month, and so there is a delay in receiving that. If you want samples of the printed edition, you can call a toll-free 877-518-5888. That's 877, that's a toll-free number, 518-5888. And if you want to get a sample of the email edition, which you can do by emailing me at joel@joelskousen.com, read all about the World Affairs Brief and see the archives from 2003 on back by going to my website, joelskousen.com, or my new website for the brief itself, which is worldaffairsbrief.com. Now, that's still somewhat under construction, but there are daily posts of the major news stories I use to analyze the brief going on there, plus an encyclopedic listing on the left of major cover-ups the government has been involved in, with excerpts from the World Affairs Brief and others on everything from the JFK assassination to 9/11 to Iraq and Afghanistan. So a lot of information on the worldaffairsbrief.com website.
All right, fine. Well, then, what is the latest World Affairs Brief going to be covering?
Well, I'm going to be talking about Cyprus. Cyprus has been a very problematic nation for a long time, a republic, ever since 1974 when the Turks invaded the island on behalf of a Turkish minority and essentially expanded their borders, drove out a lot of Greek Cypriots from the area that they eventually claimed as their own, and there's kind of been this UN-mandated green line, which is a demarcation between the north and the south. Many similar bones of contention to the Israeli-Palestinian situation. You have people driven from their homes who want to go back to the land, and now you have the UN coming in and saying we're going to have a permanent solution, and essentially most of the Greeks would lose the right to return to their original properties, and the Turks would have unlimited rights to move back in or move into the area and occupy the expanded northern area that really is a considerable expansion over what they occupied prior to 1974.
And I think that a lot of this, of course, has to do with bringing Cyprus into the European Union. It has to do with uniting this world, the New World Order. They actually offered almost $500 million to the people there if they would simply go along and accept this UN condition and unite the nation, unite the island, and have some sort of a democratic government, which the people don't want.
Well, and the reason that they don't want it... And the Greeks did vote overwhelmingly against this, what was called the Annan peace proposal after Kofi Annan. And I think for good reason. You know, the Greeks are the wronged parties in this situation. What happened in 1974, you had Archbishop Makarios in charge. He was under a lot of pressure from Greece itself to keep Cyprus as a, in essence, a de facto Greek state. Greece, you know, Athens, the government there was Marxist and had a predatory image. It was a very problematic government. And that was half the problem, is that Makarios was looked upon as a shill for the Greek government rather than representing real Cypriot independence. And in any case, there was a coup d'etat trying to overthrow Makarios, and Turkey took advantage of it to come in and overthrow the coup leaders, which the international community applauded. But in the same sense, you know, it's very interesting that Kissinger, who was Secretary of State in the United States at the time, refused to intervene on behalf of the Greek Cypriots. The British refused to intervene. They let this thing happen. They let the Turks come in and run roughshod. They really didn't do a very good job of fighting in there. The Greeks held them at bay and even were making gains. They held a ceasefire, as typical in most ceasefires. One side honors it. The Turkish side did not. They continued to expand their area of dominance during the ceasefire until the UN broke in another ceasefire, which made permanent the gains that the Turks had made, and then drove the Cypriots out of the enclaves that they had gained.
And these were the Greek Cypriots, right?
I'm sorry. I need to be careful when I'm speaking about that. There's Turkish Cypriots and Greek Cypriots.
And this is the age-old struggle between the Muslims and the Europeans. And this is exactly the same battle that you saw in Kosovo and Bosnia. And this is the clash of civilizations, and they have entirely different cultures. And you can't have them all under one government. It just isn't going to work.
That's right. And the Greeks really are, interestingly, much more prosperous under their system of government and their cultural and religious orientation than the Turkish side. The Turkish side is poor. But what the UN peace plan wanted to do was make permanent the gains that the Turks had taken by force, and that should not have been allowed. You don't want to reward people for coming in and using force to take over larger areas of someone else's country. And of course you have, by prolonging this problem for many years, you have the inevitable problems of people having taken over the Greek Cypriots' land in the Turkish sector and, of course, not wanting to give it back now after having lived many years since 1974 on this land. To give you some idea of the imbalance there, there were originally only about 100,000 Turks on the island, and after 1974, Turkey continued to encourage immigration there till they almost doubled that population in Cyprus, and the Greeks still have about 600,000, so they're by far and away the more overwhelming side. Now, the Turks tend to think because they're poor that they have to have special benefits and special laws favoring them, lest that the more industrious and wealthy Greek Cypriot side overwhelm them economically. And that probably would be true. I think in a more free market give and take there, if there weren't governments and the UN stopping the economic intercourse between the two nations, the Greeks would retake the island, essentially, and over time buy out most of the lands that had been taken from them. And that would be one peaceful solution. But Turkey doesn't want to see that. And so the UN came in and tried to broker a partition, basically making a federal system with two autonomous republics. And the problem was is that they were saying that the Greeks would get back about half the land that they had lost during the 1974 invasion. But in fact, none of that was really written into guarantees. Those were only general promises without any detailed implementation. The Greeks were very suspicious, not trusting the UN, as I think is appropriate, of these paper promises. So they rejected it overwhelmingly. This leaves no room for the UN, which had was thinking about, well, if it's a marginal vote, we can put it up for them again, just like they do when nations reject entrance into the European Union. They keep putting it before them until it finally passes. But it was so overwhelming, almost 70% against, that they feel like there's no chance of putting this back up for a vote, which is good. Now, one of the benefits of this, and that's what President Papadopoulos basically said, is that we have got everything to lose by voting for this because it inculcates a permanency among the Turkish president. We've got nothing to lose by voting no. And the reason is because Cyprus is coming into the European Union anyway, even if it isn't. Didn't vote for the On and Peace Plan, they'll just be still a divided community. So the European internationalists are really complaining that the Greeks get all the benefits of European Union membership without voting, without being required to accept the UN mandated peace plan. And whenever the UN talks about a peace plan, we're usually talking about something that's very one-sided, as it is in this case. So what they have done now, is, and it's all the buzz in the news, is that the UN is working out a plan now to discriminate against the Greek Cypriots and to reward the Turkish Cypriots for having voted yes on this referendum and the Greeks having voted no. In other words, they're going to now, rather than treat this as a Turkish invasion which had been subject to sanctions and non-allowing of immigration, now they're going to let the gates of immigration open so the Turks can overwhelm their portion of the northern side of the island. The UN, in fact, already occupying the green line, the separation between the two, will continue to make sure that the Turks have total autonomy. They're going to throw in billions of dollars in aid and trade to the Turkish side, and denying it. In other words, they're going to maintain sanctions on the Greek side and special economic privileges for the Turkish side.
In other words, we'll punish you if you don't go along with our agenda because we're here to help you.
Exactly. It's a very, very imbalanced reaction. It shows that there really isn't any true respect for democracy. The UN wants its way, much as the U.S. does in Iraq, and if they're not going to get its way, they'll figure out a way to punish the side that doesn't vote along with them. So it's obviously nothing has changed, but at least the Greeks decided they weren't going to be sold out.
And well, you know, the thing is that I think most people in the world want independence, they want freedom, but the UN has an entirely, these internationalists, these elitists who would rule the world because they're so much smarter than the rest of us, they have their agenda and they're going to use any tricks or methods that they can to force people to go along, even if they don't want to. And they fully recognize they don't have the support of the people, but they don't care. Because they have the power, and they have the money, and they have a control of the media, and they're able, of course, to create money out of nothing and buy support from corrupt leaders all over the world.
Yes, that's all too true. You know, there is the real solution for any of these divided communities, whether it's Muslims and Serbs, or whether or not it's Greek Cypriots and Turkish Cypriots, is to have a system of law much like our Anglo-Saxon system, where property rights are held inviolate and you have no rights or powers to aggress upon one another. The only reason why we have these ethnic conflicts in these areas is that you have, first of all, a form of socialism where you're dividing the pie, and that pie is divided by people who are elected by the majority. So if you're in the majority area of a Bosnian or Serbs, they oppress the opposite side. In a true constitutional system, you don't allow any minority to oppress any other minority.
Or any majority to oppress
a
minority. And that, of course, is the beauty of our system, because our system limits the power of government. And it is the government, of course, that usually does the oppressing. But we're going to be back here in just a moment with Joel Skousen and talking about the problems that face America, indeed, face the world today, but specifically the problem that's facing the people on Cyprus, where we offered them $500 million if they'd just be good little people and go along with our plan because we knew best and they wouldn't take our money. Could you imagine that? Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, our guest is Joel Skousen. Joel, pick up the story from there.
Well, actually, I'd like to switch gears now, if I can, Dr. Stan, and move on to the next subject of the brief, which is vote fraud, especially, well, not only the previous fraud that was capable even with paper ballots, but now the increasing fraud with electronic ballots.
I think that that's something we should all be concerned about, and I think electronic ballots are the worst possible thing because we will never know whether it's an honest election or not ever again.
That's right. And there was even considerable fraud before when you had a combination of paper ballots, but you had the tallying done by computers. Whether it was Florida, where this kind of thing was notorious clear back into the 70s, or New York or Chicago, where vote fraud has been notorious, they were able generally to distribute 12 to 15% of the vote one way or the other simply by managing the computer tallying of these results. Now, In Utah, we had a scandal about 4 or 5 years ago on a relatively bureaucratic election, but the fraud was extremely obvious because they wouldn't allow a recount of the paper ballots. In other words, the electronic voting tallies came up, and they have these certain areas of certifying it by doing a couple of samples. But when one candidate demanded, because the results were so skewed compared to the polls, demanded a physical recount of the ballots, all of the party headquarters and the courts collaborated together to stop any ballot recount. And that's because the paper ballots really can give you an ultimate recount if you do that, but they wouldn't allow that. And this is what happened in Florida in the 70s when brothers Ken and James Collier, who wrote the book Vote Scam, The Stealing of America, this was clear back in the 70s when they started this. Ken was running for a seat in Congress against Claude Pepper, as you remember, Red Pepper, as he was called, a real leftist, Marxist, if not communist fellow traveler in our U.S. Congress. These were really conservatives, but they were, you know, good patriotic Americans trying to run for Congress and found the system was really skewed against them, and they started to document the kind of voting problems that there were. They had videotapes, for example, of a League of Women Voters sitting there punching holes in chats to change, or punching holes in ballots to change the results. They had a videotape of that, which they took to court later on. They ran up against a local court judge at that time, or I'm trying to think what the position was, but anyway, it was Janet Reno. That's the fame that you and I know her as, the Attorney General during the Clinton administration. And she refused to allow them to rule on their vote fraud case.
Yeah, she was an attorney general. They call that.
That's right.
Like a district attorney in Florida, but they would call him attorney general.
That's correct, Florida attorney general. And so they, on appeal, it went up, and one of the federal appellate judges at the time happened to be Antonin Scalia, and he refused to allow them to hear the case at the appellate level, affirming, in other words, Janet Reno's scam. Or confirmation of the vote scam. So it's a very, very sad thing that we have Justice Scalia, who, as you and I have discussed before, is very, very good friends with Dick Cheney, who I think is President Bush's handler, someone who's tied in deeply to the powers that be. Even though Scalia...
Hold that thought right there. Okay, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Joel Skousen, and he's talking about vote scam and the fact that there are some very serious questions about some elections that were held in Florida, and of course Janet Reno at that time was like a district attorney there, who would not allow any questioning of improper voting, and when it was appealed, who did they appeal it to? But the federal judge at that time was a man named Antonin Scalia, who is presently on the Supreme Court, a good friend of Dick Cheney's. And as Joel is saying, certainly it would appear that Dick Cheney is the handler for George Bush. And if you've read any of the books that have been written about this issue, The Price of Loyalty by Paul O'Neill, it gives you the impression that Dick Cheney really is the major force in the Bush administration. This is the impression you get from reading Woodward's new book, The Plan of Attack, that Dick Cheney is the real man who's running things. George Bush is more or less a front, but he is, and Joel says that Cheney is the handler. I really believe that's absolutely right. Pick up the story there, Joel.
Well, you know, it's very interesting that you know, you take someone like Justice Thomas or Justice Scalia, people who generally vote along the conservative line. Each of these people have what I call their dark side from their prior habits. I don't believe anybody's allowed to become a justice in the Supreme Court, whether or not they pick up the tone of being conservative or liberal, unless they're controlled by the powers that be. The Supreme Court is extremely important. Now, they can afford to have a couple of token conservatives on it, but the evidence seems to indicate that the evidence given by Anita Hill and several others about the sexual harassment really was true about Thomas. it really did have a bad reputation. And, you know, you can be a conservative and still have those kinds of problems. It doesn't match my principles and it doesn't match yours, but, you know, there are any number of conservatives who have had moral problems in Congress. And it's very, very sad. When I was chairman of the Conservative National Committee in Washington, D.C., I ran into several of them, and including Newt Gingrich, who was claiming to be a conservative at that time. But I think he was coming from the other side and was simply playing a role. But perhaps these other people are playing a role as well, because Antonin Scalia, in quashing this particular case, certainly played a role in protecting the establishment corruption of the voting process. And so it it pays for us to not, you know, be overly enthusiastic when people claim to be conservative and get elected or get appointed to the Supreme Court. Now, in another you know, more recent occurrence, of course, we now have several states that have started to already have the ballotless touchscreen machines, voting machines coming in, and there's two major companies. One of them was Diebold Incorporated, and I'm not sure if they pronounce it Diebold, but it's spelled Diebold. They were just recently decertified by several jurisdictions in California because they had found that they had actually put unauthorized software on these computers, which had never been certified by the state elections commission. Even though I don't trust California's election commissions, because they have been involved in vote scams as well there, any large metro area which has a long history of democratic political machines has been involved in manipulating the vote. But in any case, it really is considered a real broach of fiduciary capacity for a voting machine company to be putting any kind of software on there that isn't specifically authorized, and specifically because of what you and I have talked about before, that unauthorized software can, in fact, manipulate the results. And that's what is so easy to do when you don't have a ballot or a paper trail. Now, even if you have a paper trail, they can still pull the Utah trick of refusing, through a variety of court interpretations, to let you handle or see or check the actual paper trail. The one excuse that they used in Utah was that they didn't want them being tampered with because they might destroy something and it might alter the results. Well, how much could you alter the results compared to the electronic vote scam that they were trying to use the paper trail to correct? So this is an ongoing problem, I'm afraid, that control through the ballot box, through falsification of the vote, is going to become epidemic once these electronic machines come into full vogue.
And I think it's so important that we let people understand that you can't trust them, that they're trying to thwart the so-called democratic process, the electoral process. I think that's a much better term. And if we just keep talking and making a fuss about it and insisting that we do not trust the electronic voting machines, who can say what software is on them? The only way we're going to be able to prevent this is just to talk about it and talk about it and talk about it and caution others about it and say, why bother to vote? All you have to do is have one person to change the entire results of any election. And about that time, when people say, we're not going to vote if you use them, maybe we can stop it. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here on Radio Liberty. Our guest is Joel Skousen. Joel, what would you say that we can do to try to thwart this effort on their part to be able to put on these electric voting machines and certainly compromise the vote of the majority?
Well, you know, there's a few things that I've seen, some different proposals. We really need to keep we need systems which have multiple paths of counting the votes rather than one single path. In other words, I prefer a system whereby a person not only keeps a copy of how he voted, but he can register it through his own party and have a separate tally, and those tallies have to match up with what comes out officially. You see, we need competitive tallying of the votes, in order to stop this kind of fraud. And I'm not saying that, there can be volunteers that, take it here and it goes through the official channels, and there can be another open public one which essentially declares tallies every 5 or 10 minutes right at a polling station, where numerous people can hear and see that tally, proposed. So there are many different ways to handle this, but obviously you have to have a paper trail of some sort to go back and check and prove those tallies. And that's why I think a combination of the electronic plus the paper vote is important.
All right, I agree with you totally, and it's just a matter of the only way this is ever going to come about is if everybody out there is informed and they talk to other people and point out that if you're having an electronic vote and tallying and there's no paper ballot, then really it's not a fair vote at all. Do you really trust the bureaucrats to do what's right and to endanger their prestige and their perks and their salaries? They're not going to do that. They're going to look out of themselves. If they have to fix the vote, they'll do it. The old adage in Chicago was vote early and vote often. And now, of course, they just have to fix the voting machine. They don't have to get the people out of the graveyard. They don't have to get all the people who have died long ago. All you have to do is control the voting machine. Well, we've got Nathan on the line who's calling from Contra Costa. So, Nathan, did you have a question or comment?
Oh, hi. It's a great show tonight. I've long since felt that Vice President Cheney really was running the White House from the very beginning. But my question is, I think that this electronic voting thing is very, very interesting. It seems to me, in a sense, it's what we've done to other countries is now, in a way, coming back at us.
Hold that thought right there. Sure. We'll be right back here in a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Joel Skousen, and we've been talking about the electronic voting and the real danger of electronic voting, because there's no permanent record and they can put whatever software they want to. In fact, they found that in several states here in California, there was unauthorized software in some of the voting machines. Maybe that explains the last election results. Well, anyway, Nathan was calling in, and he was saying that he's concerned about this. So did you have a question at all?
Yes, I did. What was your, and this has been a hot-button issue of mine for a long time, but what was your opinion of during the recall election? And I'm sorry, I did miss about the first 50 minutes of the program. You might have covered this, but the appeals justices said there was an 11-judge panel, 8 from one party and 3 of the other party. 8 and 11, by the way, are occult numbers in the Illuminati system, but that's neither here nor there. It was they said that the recall could not go through until or unless this supposedly great progressive new voting system was implemented, and they made it seem as though this would actually restore voter fairness. And I guess the bottom line is this a conspiracy that's extended right into the judiciary? Has it gone all the way up on high, or can we actually route this out?
You're speaking of here in California?
Well, and over all over the union.
But this idea that the recall could not go forward, you're speaking of California, is that right?
The current Governor Schwarzenegger was either elected or selected, depending on how you look at it or what your point of view is, but yes.
All right, fine. Well, I think the major question is, do we have such corruption in our courts it's going to be almost impossible to root it out?
I believe so, frankly, especially if you look at the California system, whether it's the Ninth Circuit or one of the biggest scandals that ever hit the California courts was this huge bankruptcy scandal that Rodney Stitch detailed so well in his book Defrauding America. Here was a federal bankruptcy judges and attorneys that had a system of collusion that were splitting the assets and selling off estate. If you had an estate in bankruptcy or a company in bankruptcy that had considerable assets, you would always get it taken over by the state and sold off at pennies on the dollar to attorneys who were related to this particular group. Just a very, very corrupt system. you know, Rodney Fish talked about the fact that we had numerous federal whistleblowers, including himself, that went to prison, and they were always the same judges that were sending them to prison. And obviously they were getting the phone call in the night saying, this person's to be taken down. Now, it's true that they do rule according to law a fair amount of the time when it isn't an essential or a crucial system. They don't have to bend the rules all of the time. It's the same thing with voting. They don't have to corrupt the system when you've got a liberal democratic voting center like in San Francisco. They don't have to do any manipulation there. But when it does come to Orange County, for example, and several conservatives who were taken out, one by Sanchez, who's still in power now, I mean, they had to have some real corruption in terms of falsification of voter registration for Hispanics and allowing them to vote. And the judges have consistently upheld the vote results even when they've been challenged.
But, of course, Newt Gingrich went right along with that. That could have been challenged by the Republican-controlled House of Representatives, and Newt Gingrich and the Republican leadership did not want Bob Dorn in there. They'd rather have a radical leftist like Sanchez than a responsible, God-fearing conservative like Bob Dorn.
He did challenge her being seated, and they, as you said, you know, rejected that challenge.
Right.
Well, the last question, I'll take it off the air, is that speaking of when you said Hispanic, you meant illegal alien. When they have no, you're right, and they have no business voting. Any citizen of any nationality can vote. That's the right of a citizen, whatever ethnicity, and that's just completely appalling. But do you believe that it is the Democratic Party, or do you believe that this is, as I do, that this is a conspiracy above the two parties? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
All right. And did you get the question, Joel?
I did. It's a very good question. It used to be, frankly, very much a Democratic issue in New York, Chicago, and Florida, and you know, San Francisco. Those machines were Democratic machines. The corruption was Democratic, and that's how they maintained power in those machines. But now it's every bit as much a Republican corruption from the year 2000 election, where they really did manipulate that election. I mean, they tried everything in the book to get George Bush elected in essentially a Democratic majority in this United States, and you know, they siphoned off votes from Al Gore. They made Al Gore look like a fool, and still they had to manipulate finally the vote in Florida, as well as get the Supreme Court to you know, intervene in the results. And I don't know what they're going to do this year, but this is clearly an issue of manipulating the vote is becoming more and more important. They've had to work awfully hard at the media getting people accustomed to who the front runner is. As I pointed out during the first Clinton campaign, he was a nobody, and all of a sudden the media, every one of the stations was saying that the front runner for the Democratic Party is Arkansas Governor Bill Clinton. And I said to myself, like everyone else, says who? I mean, what evidence? We never heard of this guy.
And it was the same thing with Jimmy Carter, this, you know, this governor from Georgia nobody ever heard of. And he was created by the media. Of course, he had the backing of David Rockefeller and Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was his handler. Of course, he became the president of the United States.
And the same thing, of course, happened with George Bush. Now, George Bush went from a nobody in Texas, a lazy, laid-back
Thank you.